Backslash theology.
A little Cajun music there, huh, Denise?
I like that. I love that Cajun music.
Yeah.
Make you want to dance.
Oh, I tell you, I know who does get up and dance is Carlo Broussard, the Cajun Catholic apologist. How you doing, Carlo?
Hey, good morning, Jeff and Denise. And I tell you what, I know a thing or three about Cajun music, eh?
Uh-huh. I know that. In fact, you're joining us from the West Coast where it is, 5:47 a.m. God bless you, man.
Thank you for
getting up early. Yeah. And we love listening to you on Catholic Answers Live because you do interject some Cajun music in there occasionally. We love being able to relate to that as well.
Amen.
But more than that, you don't get an introduction like this very often, but you're just a really smart guy. And
I don't know about that.
But you do know a lot about the Catholic Church, the history, the traditions, and you're an apologist, and you have a book that really will help all of us in apologetics, preparing the way, overcoming obstacles to God, the gospel, and the church. And you kind of started talking about this a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so we had a show where we talked about the book in general, and then we did a show where we talked about the first chapter, looking at the strategies for removing that obstacle of there being no truth whatsoever. So someone could say, how can I believe in objective truth when there is no such a thing? And so responding to this idea of relativism. So today, I thought we would talk about the chapter in that section of Preparing the Way for Truth that deals with the common obstacle of, how can I believe in truth when people believe so many different things, right? Mm. I mean, one group's good or truth can be another group's evil or falsehood,
right?
And if there were objective truth, one might say, shouldn't we see a greater consensus of the truth? So how do we remove this obstacle? Well, here are the strategies, guys. First of all, we need to show that this argument or this argument from differing beliefs is what we call in philosophy a non sequitur. Hmm. That's just some highfalutin philosophical Latin language for it doesn't follow. Okay, so the conclusion, there is no truth, doesn't follow from the premise people believe different things. Mm-hmm. So in other words, to put it, the bottom line is just because people believe different things, that doesn't mean there's no objective truth. So for example, let's say, guys, Jeff and Denise, you say the earth is spherical. I say it's flat, right?
Yeah, okay.
We have a disagreement.
Right.
Does it follow from that disagreement or differing belief about the shape of the earth that there is no objective truth about the shape of the earth? Of course not. If there were no objective truth about the shape of the earth, guess what? We wouldn't be here, right?
Right, yeah.
So just because we disagree about something or we have a differing belief about something, it doesn't mean there's no objective truth about the matter. Or let's say we're driving down the Arizona desert road, right, 125, 30 degrees out there.
Yeah.
And, I forgot the water. I'm back home, man. Mm-hmm. And, we're dying of thirst and there's no water in sight. And we're just dying out there, and then I see water up ahead, and I say, Jeff, look, man, finally, God provided us some water in the desert, kind of like the Israelites. And then Jeff said, no, couillon, that's just a mirage up there. No, granted, we have differing beliefs here. We have a different perspective about what is real. Does it follow from that disagreement that there's no objective truth about whether or not it's a mirage? Of course not. So that's the first strategy. Just because people believe different things, it doesn't follow from that that there is no objective truth. So that's what we call in philosophy a non sequitur. Now, strategy two is another sort of a philosophical fallacy. It's called begging the question. And what that means is that the person is basically assuming, what they're trying to prove. Because notice, Jeff, if you're telling me, well, Carlo, if there were objective truth, then everybody would be agreeing upon that. Now, my response to that would be, well, Jeff, aren't you assuming that universal agreement is a criterion for truth?
Hmm.
Aren't you assuming that everybody has to believe in something in order for there to be objective truth? But you're assuming, the assumption is that No, well, let me retract there. If no universal agreement, then no absolute truth. But you're assuming that everyone has to agree. But that's the essence of relativism. Yeah, relativism states that you know the whole society has to agree on something in order for there to be truth. So you're basically assuming what you're trying to prove. You're saying, oh, everybody has to agree on the truth. And that's what you're trying to prove. But you have to assume that to make this argument. You're assuming that everybody has to agree for there to be objective truth. But guess what, Jeff? Right. If objective truth exists, well, it doesn't matter if everybody agrees or not.
Oh, man. See? Told you he was a smart guy.
Right. And then finally, in strategy three, listen. Here's the point. A lot of times people think, well, cultures have so many different moralities, right? So they don't agree on anything. Well, actually, we can challenge that assumption.
Oh?
Most of the times, it's not the moral principles themselves that are different. It's judgments about the facts. So, for example, as I point out in the book, in 17th century Hudson Bay tribes, they believed it noble to have your children strangle you to death. Why? Because you didn't want to be a burden on the society. It was considered a noble death.
Really?
Now watch this. The idea that dying for the sake of the welfare of the group, that's a noble act. That's something that's common across cross cultures. Hmm. Where we differ is judging what actually counts as a noble death on behalf of the group. So notice the moral principle, an honorable death, dying for the sake of the group, that's universal. But where we differ is our judgment about what sort of circumstance does that moral principle apply. You might even take abortion as an example. Mm. So, you know, cross-culturally, we say, do not kill the innocent.
Right.
But where we differ is in our judgment on who is innocent, right? Or is that even a human being in the womb? Mm. So very often, cross-culturally, it's not the moral principles themselves where we differ. Mm-hmm. It's with regard to our judgment of the facts. You know, in India, it's immoral to kill cows. Why? Because they think they're sacred. Whereas here in America, hey, man, that cow out there is going in my stomach when they get, you know, in that good old hamburger.
Sure.
So, but notice the principle, respect the sacred, is the same. Mm. But our difference is in the judgment of the facts. Wow. That cow is not sacred in our perspective. In India, it is sacred.
Yes.
So the differing beliefs argument does not stand up to the scrutiny of reason in order to show that there's no objective truth. So those are the three strategies that I present in the book here.
Ooh, got to get the book. I'm telling you, because I was taking notes and ran out of paper. Carlo Broussard, Cajun apologist, where can we find the book?
They can go to shop.catholic.com.
Okay.
The banner is right there. When you get to it, click on the banner, or you can get it on amazon.com, and then you can follow my work at carlobroussard.com.
Carlobroussard.com, and the name of the book is Preparing the Way, Overcoming Obstacles to God, the Gospel, and the Church. Whew, man, I'm telling you what, you gave my mind a little workout there.
It's good to exercise those intellectual muscles.
It is. It definitely is.